welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Ray, welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
Hey, cheers, Scott. Thanks for having me back on again. and thanks for answering the call to have a chat about some of this as well.
Hey, no problem at all. It's a pleasure having you back on. And I think once again, as always with you, it seems to be quite timely. The thing we want to talk about, and you're the best person for it, but also it's been in my head over the last few weeks for other reasons we'll talk about as well in due course. It's all good and it's great to have you on. What we won't do, if it's okay, there's no point, I think, if you're okay with this, to go back over the what you've done, all that kind of stuff, because people can pick up in the last episode. So I'll put a link into that and people can catch on with you. But just since we last spoke, which wasn't that long ago, everything's still going okay?
Yeah, everything's gone good. Since we last spoke, I don't know exactly when that was. It's months rather than beyond that, I think.
I think it was March time,
I released Coaching Through Superiorities, another book, which has gone down really well. And then the usual, courses and webinars and coach development, which we'll speak a lot about now, and then the day job as well. So, it's... busy but all good, and do what you love, right?
Pleased with the book, Ray? All good with the book?
Yeah. Really pleased with how it's gone down. You know what? There's a slight, even now I've done 9, and there's a moment of dread, when you get that sort of notification that it's now live and like other people can read it and see it. There is that sense of, oh no, what did I do that for? What did I write in that chapter? You've proofread it to death, but you're still worried about that part about, I don't know, whatever. So it's been reviewed really well so far. I get nice tweets about it, so I'm going to assume that that's across the board, I'm pleased with the end product, to be fair. I was scrolling through it for some like little snippets and stuff to put on Twitter and X and LinkedIn and all that sort of stuff, so it kind of reminded me of some of the content and going, I think that'd be really interesting sort of chat or something really interesting to read. So yeah, all good.
I know you set yourself a high bar, so I've got no doubt you'll always critically look at it through your eyes, but I'm sure from an audience point of view, and certainly from a consumer point of view, they're always fantastic. You find a different angle on things, you find a way to make it make sense. I'm sure you should be rightly proud of it, and I'm sure that's the feedback you'll be getting. But anyway, onto the podcast. So the theme for this, okay, Ray, is look, we won't dwell on this too much because I like to do a podcast myself about having recently completed the UEFA B programme and the highs and lows and challenges of doing that. And hey, maybe you might be the best person to chat about that with as well, but we'll park that slightly to one side. But it got me thinking about just, coach development more broadly. And I think historically on the podcast, we've spoken about topics for coaches to pick up on and work with their players, which is what it's about really, I guess. And even with you, we don't talk about necessarily the coach development side, more about the content of the stuff that you're putting out there, which is fantastic. But I just wanted to really get your view and a discussion around, what kind of makes great coach development from both, I guess, the side from you come from as a coach developer, and you've done this for years now and you know what you're doing, but also, from a person going on your programs, how can they be really good and make the most out of, those opportunities, those experiences. And I thought we could have a chat around that, if that sounds okay with you.
Sounds really good. Let's do it.
All right, brilliant. All right, fantastic. Okay, so we've got a number of questions we'll work through, but feel free to take us off piece if you need to another place or ask the right questions. You can put me back on track somewhere. But okay, so right, obviously you've been involved in coach development for probably more years than you care to think about now, but certainly for a while. Firstly then, so what do you think really makes coach development effective beyond just ticking boxes for badges or CPD hours, things like that? What do you think kind of broadly makes coach development effective?
I like you talk about ticking boxes for coach development and stuff like that. Like that's a necessity rather than necessarily I'm going to go into a Zoom room or I'm going to go into a classroom and learn about that because I'm really interested in it. Personally, I think, I'll use the term deep learning. just to sort of increase the gravitas of it. I believe deep learning comes from a something that captures you, right? And that might be the smallest sentence someone says on a coaching course or in a webinar or on a podcast or something that you'll grab onto and think, wow, that's really interesting. I never thought of it like that. So we were talking about penetration before we started, around principles of play and stuff like that. For example, like that's a great rabbit hole to go down about, what kind of surrounds that, what does that look like, how important is it, all that sort of stuff. So I think something I've championed a lot, and I've only championed it because of a feeling I used to get in coach and still do in coach education environments where you go, wow, that's really interesting. I need to know more. So like forget about your CPD hours, like do them, but I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about that part of you that has to go Google it. That has to go, oh, I need to ask ChatGPT about that. Or I need to order a book, or I need to go to YouTube, or I need to speak to the guy or the girl over there who knows all about it. So to me, that sparks deep learning, that really relates to my team. I think we should do that with my group and so on. So in a way, what you're doing is you're making the same lecture, the same video, whatever it is you're picking it up from, you're making that individual to everyone without really knowing about it necessarily. I've said throwaway things before that have nothing to do with a webinar content, and someone's gone, I remember when you said that, and it just like that moment. We call them light bulb moments on our programs and stuff, but it was just that moment where I've gone, ah, I need to go and kind of root that out. And other people would go write a whole webinar on 4231. Coaching Badgers on Twitter did a great webinar with us on 4231, and people just like as a whole would love it. Some people would like a little part, so therefore it automatically becomes individual. And I reckon if coach education at the end of when's the end, but at the end of a qual, let's say, if it was like, have we created some free thinkers around a certain level of topic or football, then we've kind of let the cat out of the bag, so to speak. And anything's possible after that.
Brilliant. I'm like, we're going to come on to a bit later on about how you actually choose topics you put on your CPD stuff, because you've always got a good variety of different speakers on there covering some really key things. But obviously, there's so many you could choose from. It must be hard to focus down the ones you want. But that's a later question, so we'll park that for a second. But back onto your answer then, really. So, following on, really, how key is context then to this? Because I always think that it must be quite difficult, because. And because I'm still very much learning my trade as a coach, I feel like I need to kind of have all the bits lined up for me to kind of see it clearly. Like, so I need to know my game model, and I need to know the team I've got and the players, and then I can kind of put makes things make sense. But obviously, you can't put on CPD sessions just for me. You've got to do it for your whole audience. So, how much is it kind of just, a one size fit all approach, or how much is it kind of just, independently kind of put together?
Like it's we can't, so I'm gonna give you a football, like a coaching analogy to help answer the question. So I cannot, with a group of players, I cannot teach them specifically everything about football, right? Every and I and like let's go really minute, every turn, every first touch, every whatever, right? And build that right up to an off the ball action in an 11v11 game, right? And you've got everything else in between that. It's a 360 game. Players can go anywhere at any time, and it's all over the place, right? So there's too much content within football for one coach to take a group of players through the whole game, right? In its minutest detail. So what we do is we let the game help us do that, right? The variability of the game helps us do that. So I've never coached a player, for example, to I've never done a session on controlling the ball with the outside of your foot, but that inherently happens when we play small-sided games. It inherently happens when we play games on a Saturday, et cetera, et cetera. Now, in terms of coach development, I've decided that instead of going, right, we need to talk about this in detail, because it's just too much. Like, it's so broad. When you think about the football stuff, the football sessions, like the actual balls, bibs, and cones, then talk about communication, leadership. Like, communication, for example, like, it's not only talking and shouting and all that, it's like, how deep down a rabbit hole could you go about body language, for example, right? Like, I'm sure there's somewhere you can do a PhD on body language, you know what I mean? So we
Yeah.
can't go down all those. But what we can do is put an expert in the room that goes, look, I know this really, really well. And then we're relying on the light bulb moments of people in the room to, and I love the idea of inducing sort of aha moments in people. I like that's I covered that quite a lot. But I can't control them. You know, I can control the topic that's being delivered, but I can't control what you take from it necessarily, or as much as I think I could. What I can do is kind of put things out there and just bait you into sort of finding a light bulb or finding a moment to take it away. So I control it by not controlling it, if that makes sense.
It definitely does. But I guess that's probably like coaching, that's probably a bit of a craft, isn't it? To be able to create content and conversations and to be able to provide your audience, with a theme or a topic that doesn't kind of dictate like necessarily an outcome, or a way of thinking. I'm going to guess that's probably an art in itself, creating that stuff and getting the right people in to present it, whether that's you or somebody else. Is that an important part of when you put your content together?
Sure, and you know, if I present something on football intelligence, just come to my head, and someone else presents an hour on football intelligence, like it'll probably overlap somehow, but it will go somewhere else, obviously, because what I see as central to it or important to it won't be quite as what someone else has seen and their set of experiences. So I am, in a sense, keen to use the big picture, so to speak, and allow people the ability, and actually we set it up, the whole thing is set up for you and the last program, 99 others, to watch the same thing, and yeah, there'll be loads of overlap, but for you to like it, someone else to not like it so much. I preferred the webinar last week because some of them will relate to you different.
Yeah.
And it's just like nobody, I don't believe anybody can pick that apart,
Yeah.
only you yourself, you know. And like I say, people have picked things up in webinars that I've not even heard, you know,
Yeah.
that's just not registered. And that's how people are.
I think that's like
And
good art, isn't it, Ray? It's like when you look at a good picture or you look at a really good book, it's not what the author, the artist tells you, it's what you take out of it, isn't it? It's kind of you look at it and you pick the bits that are most relevant to you. And I think that's what it's most beautiful, because personally, I'd rather look at stuff and get my own take than be told, like, this is the picture and this is what it should look like. You're like, well, actually, I want to be able to interpret it that's right for me. And I guess that's the beautiful part of it.
yeah, you do. And I used the term earlier, like free thinking people or free thinkers off the back of it. Like that's, to me, like you think of the innovations in football over the last, let's say, 10 years or something like that. There was some point in time where, and I'm not saying it's only Guardiola, because it's a bit kind of naff talking about him all the time, because he's just involved in everything, it seems. But that moment where he's going, do you know what? I'm going to put my fullback into midfield, right? Now, if I had done that on my, for example, on my UEFA license, that would have been, whoa, 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 whoa. Stop. What are you doing? You know what I mean? That's not how football is played, right? And the same could be said about, I don't know, like the Chelsea manager that'll put the fullback into a number 10 position, or any of those little innovations. We could go on and on about Dortmund, whose left wing back swaps with a striker and all that sort of stuff. That was really kind of, when I grew up watching football, like completely unheard of. Certainly when I was doing my badges, it was, you know, that sort of stuff was really in its infancy. So to me, we need to have coach development right at the sharp edge of what's current, but allowing people to go
Yeah.
and take that away and interpret it, like you said. Now, I think there's a line, but there's a line that you cross, I think, in any topic where you go from, you need to tell me everything about this because I don't know stuff. Do you know what I mean? And it doesn't matter what topic that might be. I just don't know it well enough to be able to go get creative with it. So you take people up to a level, which I think coaching quals should be for. Take people up to a level of understanding and a level of coaching, then allow them to go, right, now I'm going to put, when we were watching football, I'm going to put the left foot around the right foot. You know what I mean? Like that, which I don't know how long ago that was, 35 years ago, was like a new thing, So, yeah, I think if we produce more free thinkers, more individuals, then we get more nuance, we get more Bielsa, we get more ideology or difference.
And I know that a lot of things you put out there, whether it's the books, the webinars, the CPD sessions, whatever it is you put out there, I know you, well, from my understanding and what I've experienced myself is you seem to find content and topics, but also people supporting those that probably I don't find too preachy. They tend to kind of make suggestions or present, scenarios or the topic. They don't really tell you what it is. And I'm going to guess that's a conscious thing. That's my first question. And then a follow-up question that would be, obviously, as coaches, we tend to go down the governing body route for the official recognition. However, when we think about that, that tends to be the path you have to take. What's your view? I guess being polite on this one, but what's your view? Do they take a similar approach, or do you think the FA's approach is more dictatorial in the sense of, there are the principles of play, there are this, there is that, and that has to be put into what you practice and what you preach. On that line, are they in the right space, which from your opinion, or do you think it's, and I don't know what the answer is to that. I'm just trying to think, like, sometimes things that they've got to spot. I was thinking, well, actually, it's a little bit like you can't go too off piece, and like you say, you can't make too many changes. So do you pick people that kind of allow the conversation to happen for your CPD sessions? And second of all, what do you think about the FA's position currently?
So, first of all, Eddie Rubio was on, who I did my UEFA A license with, oh my gosh, years ago. Eddie was first team coach at Wolves and West Ham under Julian Lopetegui. And he came on just last week. We did a sort of a pre-coach development program, kind of early one, a bonus early one. And he came on and he created a light bulb that he didn't realize he was going to do that night. And a lot of people who spoke to me about the session afterwards, he said, you should never become a prisoner of your own words, right? So I think what a lot of, and I'd never sort of framed it like that, but I've always thought about that. Like, if I'm going to be forthright and I'm going to shove something down your throat as right, as completely right, then, I've got to really, it's got to be a really strong idea or concept, or I've got to do a massive climb down in 5 years' time. And that's, you can imagine, I said to you earlier that you get a feeling of dread when you put a book out. It's exciting, it's far more exciting than dread, but you dread that guy on Twitter that goes, oh, in making the ball roll 10 years ago, you said that you should do whatever, right? And you and like that's the space as well, isn't it? And like, I suppose the comfort is that I'm that comfortable in my own skin. If I feel it was now wrong, then you would say it was now wrong. Anyway, so I guess educators are very conscious that I think football as a space, certainly elite level football as a space, I think more people lean in now. They lean into stuff that's different because of the way it's gone in a really short space of time, I think, over the last. And look, I've had some really forthright people on who've got ideas or philosophies or ways of doing things. Some people who have completely different ways of doing. There was one, I won't start naming names or anything like that, but we had one webinar that was around a coach, a really high level coach. He played a version of possession football that was totally different with young players, that was totally different than, open your body up, hit your back foot, like that kind of we're familiar with. But he was really forthright with it, and you just knew when I go to watch him coach, that's what I will see. And then it's up to people if they want to absorb some of it, if they want to go down that rabbit hole, if that's important to them, or maybe they think it's nonsense. But if you listen to something for an hour and you think it's nonsense, well, at least you filtered it. You know what I mean? That's a form of education in itself to go,
Absolutely.
well, actually, that's gone through my process, my brain, my neurological process, and I just it doesn't fit into my schema, or I won't change my schema for it. So you just put it away, and that's also learning. The second half of your question around the FA, I always genuinely I always loved the FA stuff. So I did all my coach education through the FA in England, and I've done stuff abroad, but with a different hat on sometimes. Like sometimes guesting on a course, or observing a course, or whatever it might be in Africa and Asia and whatnot, other parts of Europe. I had the poorest course I did as a candidate was 2006, I think, which was what we now would call a C license, the level two at the time. It was just a complete rote learning experience. Do what we. I remember the tutor telling me on the way out to the pitch, you know, you're bright as a button. You know, the first sort of morning you go out on the pitch with, my idea around the C license at the time and the level two was, this makes this levels me up from doing level ones that were, you did, and I enjoyed them, but they were, very, very passable. The level two was like, oh, 33% pass rate,
Yeah,
it's gotta be good for
it's an achievement, yeah.
it. And rightly so, and it should be. Coach Ed, through those formal quals should separate, as per those dividing lines. But it was just, I found it really poor. Simple as that, and just the way it was, yeah, it sort of deflated you by just saying, just copy what we do, to the point where if you ask the striker to press the centre back inside instead of pressing to send him outside, it was like finished, quite dead.
Yeah.
But then everything after that, I will say, I absolutely took a net gain. I thought the FA Youth Awards were fantastic, and I'm a little bit out of the loop. So I was in the tutor training part of that when I sort of left England and started doing other things, and I understand they've absorbed some of that in. So I thought they were really dynamic. I thought the people when I was around the FA, and I'm going back nearly 10 years now, were exceptionally dynamic, like very, very clever people. Think back, John Griffiths, Nick Levitt, Ben Bartlett at the time as well. Really clever people,
Yeah.
and thinkers of it. So we're a little bit out of the loop on it now, but certainly that 20-year-old experience, I shouldn't expect to get on a formal course again.
I think it's interesting because obviously sitting where you sit, where you create your CPD, and obviously it's, it's dissociated from the governing body as such. And, I just think it offers something unique and different. And I wonder with the governing bodies whether or not they're restricted on what they can. I don't know. Or maybe it's hard to kind of do the things that you guys do because of the fact you can work quicker on stuff and pick people up, and you get that fluidity with the stuff that you put out as opposed to obviously the FA stuff's got probably a long lead time in and a long lead time out, right?
So back when CPD hours were becoming a thing, I don't know when exactly that was in England, and the DNA, the England DNA was coming out, which obviously reached right down into every level of coaching. I think there was, and I think I would be the same, an active sort of policy to go, whoever delivers CPD for us, it should be somewhat of a control over it, because there's no point in the DNA saying something and Ray Power saying something else. So they had a really tight control over it. And as time has gone on, I know for a fact they relaxed those, because I did some webinar-based CPDs over the last few years, that you kind of submitted for approval, let's say. And it was far more, yeah, it was kind of like, yeah, that's a good football topic, crack on,
Good.
and all the paperwork is done. Now, if I'm so I've sat at the the top of a number of academies where you're driving a identity or DNA or whatever it is, a curriculum, whatever it is you want to call all those things. And you need to make sure that your assistant is doing those things. And you need to make sure that the volunteer coach, for example, right down the bottom with the under fives, is towing that line, the shared sort of DNA. So I get it from an FA point of view when they kind of reach down and they go, okay, this is what a UEFA B looks like. This is what the units should look like. These are the modules and the way it's set up. And we're going to lean on to playing out from the back. We're going to lean on to being flexible with formations and all that other stuff that's in the DNA because that they're the outcomes we're looking for. And you know, it's a broad old topic football, and
Yeah,
to cover everything is impossible. Like, so
well, that leads in nicely to the next question then, Ray. How do you choose your topics? Because you pick some fantastic ones, and I don't know how you must have done. Is it your 13th one coming up soon with the next the CPD session? So you know you're not covering the same. I know you pick up things that are relevant, you know, consistently, but also you pick up new things each time. So how does that process work as a coach developer, and how do you choose what you're going to focus on?
really evolved, I must say. So when the first program I put out right back in lockdown, and this where it all stems from. It stems from a colossal amount of stuff that was out there during lockdown, if you remember. And the idea was, well, let's pull something together where I always use the term, when you hit log off, you don't just stop. You know, it's not like just turning the TV off. You know, I want to send someone to hit log off and then go, I wonder if there's a book on leadership that I could read, or I wonder if there's a, you know what I mean, a video on YouTube about pressing or something like that. I want people or to text each other. I love that even more. Put something in the group. Hey, has anyone heard of that before? So all I want to do really is to create enthusiasm amongst learners. And that went from, I think my first course, I think it was five webinars where the first one was like a lead into what we will do and some of the ideas. Then we went something technical, tactical, something physical, something social, something psychological. And it was like hit the four corners and we'll wrap it up. And then it became, you know, when I started getting more guests in and stuff like that, like someone would come to me and go, hey, look, I'm doing this, or I see a book I really like. And I've loved being able to do what the FA can do. And that's just go, right, I'm going to follow my nose here and go, that looks brilliant. I bet my guys would love to do that. And I'd love to see that. You know, you'll have had this before, Scott. I remember Gary Kernan saying it. He said, you know, running a podcast allows you to follow what you're interested in at
Absolutely.
times as well.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd
That's
love
the
to
other way
tell
I
you
work,
this.
right? I'm completely, that's all I do. It's completely selfish.
And maybe you wanted something a little bit more methodical than that, but it can literally become like that. Like you have an outstanding guest from, you know, maybe the first conversation sometimes could have been 18 months ago, and just because of A, B, C, and D, you've just not got it over the line, and you get an opportunity, and bang, you do. So, for example, the first session on, so the 13th of July, CDP Coach Development Program 13 starts. Pitso Mosamane, who's 99% of coaches, I would say, in the UK will not have heard of him. Pitso is like 1.2 million followers on Twitter. He's the most winningest coach in Africa, as far as I know. He's won the African Champions League three times. He's won leagues in Saudi and South Africa. He's got his own football academy, like just a complete all-rounder. And we finally managed to sort of sync diaries and all that. So bang, in you go. Like that's just it. And what I've started to do over the last year is anything that's really robust, we go on a four webinar short course together. So I've got one coming up with Graham Mills on individual development plans. That's a big interest from people. Connor Washington did a session on goal scoring in the last program, and there was that much kind of bubbling interest after it that we've got to turn it into something longer and more robust. So that's kind of like light bulb moments, consecutive light bulb moments in the program, and then the more robust short courses after that.
Yeah, perfect. All right, well, thanks, though. It can't be easy. You do it fantastic, and you get some great people on there as well. We'll come back and talk, if it's okay, a bit more at the end about some of the highlights to look forward to for the CPD number 13, if that's all right. So we'll come back to that. I'm sure there's other things in there you'd like to mention as well. Back on, before we talk about maybe the coaches who do this and what they can bring to the equation, right? Because it's not just about what you provide, it's what we come and how we can best learn. And you may have touched on something we've already said a little bit before, but just to be clear about it, how much of it is about trying to help coaches improve their sessions, and how much is about trying to help coaches improve their thinking?
How much of it? Let's just for ease of argument, let's just say it's 50-50. I'm probably actually it's probably much more in terms of changing their thinking, if I'm honest. Because if you can change thinking, then you probably change session delivery and whatever else, kind of whatever rabbit hole you do go down. I deliberate soccer practice, which is kind of my style of coaching in a sense. Stemmed not from some guy going, this is a really good passing session, or this is a really good possession game. It came from, an idea, theory, sort of theory brought to life, I guess. When I read books around Daniel Coyle's Talent Code, for example, was a big influence on me, because it's sort of like tried to apply some of his research around how people learn and how talent is developed. Applied that to football. So I guess a change of thinking, you would like to think it's a change or an upgrade, should we say. People don't like changing stuff, but an upgrade. Like if I could find a better way of coaching or developing something, then all the better. And secondly, we must say that, like, I'm coaching every day, sometimes twice a day, so I'm immersed in it. And I think the more you do it, the more long term you look about it. So you could have a really good session or a really bad session for a million reasons, right? We all know that. But the good or the bad don't really hit as hard anymore, because you kind of feel like you're on this journey. I can experiment. I can, try something. I can, something bombs and you just move on. And you know what I mean? You kind of bring it on the journey with you. And I suppose to answer your question, then that kind of leaves us with how we think about stuff, right? And how we ultimately our brain is made up of a circuitry that we've picked up over the course of our lives, right? Including how we coach, how we see football and all that. So if you grew up 4-4-2 and you entered coaching really, firm with that, then it's probably where you're going to start, right? I would assume. And it's going to take a little bit of reworking, for someone to plant a seed that will change that structure in your mind. But that does obviously happen as well.
Yeah.
But it happens bit by bit. It doesn't necessarily happen
Yeah.
all in one shot.
Of course. Yeah. So another challenge I would imagine for you, again, looking aside from coach development, is balancing the whole kind of theory and practical stuff. Some people love the theory. I actually don't mind the books and the detail behind it and stuff. And other people very much like, if it's not on the grass and with cones, I'm not going to really understand it. And maybe it might depend on what the topic is and stuff like that. How much time and effort do you give to kind of making sure that hits like a sweet spot? Because I guess you don't want it to be too theory oriented, where it's all kind of like very much, written from the books and, all the research that comes with it. And you're limited to how you do much practical stuff, because obviously you can show and demonstrate things visually, but you're not getting, 20 coaches out on a 4G pitch and getting demos going. So how would you do that effectively?
I find that I think everyone in the space loves being on the side of a pitch when there's something going on and something new and cool and good sessions about to, kick off and stuff. I find that when you're doing demos like that live, I find that you can get more done or more covered in an hour in a webinar. And I'll tell you why. And this is not me saying it's better. I just think the bang for your minute, rather than bang for your buck, is that if I show you something on the grass, I'm probably going to have to wade through it with a bunch of players for 15 minutes while everyone starts off, they chat loads, they do whatever task on the side, and then it all ebbs away, right? And you're laughing, I can see you laughing. So it's everyone, and everyone starts talking about, I wonder what's for lunch and all that, and everyone sort of drifts off with it. Whereas I find in a webinar, you put up some video, you put up, and you don't have to go through the kind of the session part. So I'm going to build this. The first thing I'm going to talk about is their body shape, and then I'm going to let them play for a couple of minutes. Next thing I'm going to talk about is the weight of pass, and then I'm going to let them play for a few minutes. And third thing I'm going to talk, you know what I mean? It's just a time thing. Whereas if you get validated people, I would suggest in a room with an expertise in something niche, I think you can cut through all that and get directly to it a little bit quicker. Ultimately, what happens on the grass or what best practice on the grass comes from someone's theory somewhere. So someone at one point, Scott, decided that the 11v11 game, that's the purest form of football, 11v11, right? Even if you're underage, you'll eventually play 11v11 football. But we very, very rarely train 11v11 because it's impractical. We don't have the pitch size. We don't have 22 players at training and all that. So we do other stuff on the way towards that 11v11 training. So that's a theory in itself. So whether it's the worst passing drill known to man, or whether it's a 3 versus 3 or a rondo or all that, it's just the game broken up a little bit. And at some point or other, that's someone's decided that, you know what would be a great idea? Like the guy in Barcelona who bet the rondo, I can't remember his name right now. We're going to do it this way because of this.
Yeah.
Put it on the grass, and if theory doesn't hit the grass, it's probably something getting in the way. But everything on the grass has come from book or a theory or an idea, at least.
Yeah. Do you ever
And then
worry
the
about that
tackle.
it goes too much the other way? Do you ever get situations where either through, the guest speakers you have on, does it get too theoretical at times, or are you kind of comfortable wherever it lands, it's going to sit for somebody anyway? Or do you vet that stuff, or you just let it unfold?
Like, I would love to go to rewind 10 years probably and go, right, I'm putting on, I've done this before, to be fair, but not enough, consider I've rarely been in the country in the last 10 years. But to put something in Birmingham and Nottingham or somewhere in the Midlands and go, right, for the whole day, let's come down, let's do some stuff on the pitch, let's put, that thing I was saying about deliberate practice, let me go show you. Or, you have a stab at it and we'll pick it apart and we'll do all that. But it's just not the space anymore, and it's more global than that as well. But yeah, look, I miss the face to face. I miss the face to face because of nothing else, because of body language. When you're in a great classroom, you've had classroom learning recently, having that ability to bounce off even people's body language or something I'm, I think, personally quite hyper aware of. So I do miss that, but I think it's where the space is at for me at the moment.
I think from my experience, real life practical demonstrations tend to be a bit hit or miss, for all the reasons you mentioned there. There's lots of variables that don't go quite right, or you've got to let things play out, stuff like that. The best practical demonstrations I've seen have often been pre-recorded ones where the coaches or the coach, the people doing the teaching, the coach developers, they've got their clips shown and it's set and you can see it all and you can rewind and see things. So I actually think, my personal view is the practical life sessions can be overrated from that side of thing. Not the classroom-based stuff, because you're with people and that's a good networking stuff. But actually, if you're going to use visuals, I think recorded ones often work better because you've got that control over it and you can really see what's going on. So,
And you're going to model the best version of what you want to
of
show.
course, yeah.
That's not just football. That's any sort of teaching, anything, right? You want to, if you're doing a course on car safety, you want to show,
Yeah,
suppose you do show the bad, but
yeah.
you do want to model what you want to see. So,
Yeah.
but there's spaces for that. You know what I mean? There's people doing that and whatnot, which makes, I guess it makes different programs suit different people as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
But I just
cross section, probably the best.
quickly Googled who invented the rondo, and I think was it Lorenzo Ruiz? Does that sound about right? Something like that.
Yes, yes, yes,
I
yes,
didn't know
yes.
that. I've Googled it. I'll be honest. Yeah, but you did know it. But there you go. From the 1970s. That shows you how long one's been going for. But yeah, brilliant. Okay. So
Love you, Mace.
just before we move on to looking at the other side, looking at the coaches on the courses. Have you ever had a coach developer or someone that you've been with even at, oh no, I don't obviously name many names if you have, but someone that just it hasn't worked for whatever reason, and they just haven't been able to engage the audience, or it hasn't got the message across, or it's just kind of it's gone wrong for a specific reason. You may not have, and if you don't name names, please.
Yeah, no, I won't name names, but look, I'll return the question to you in a different way. Have you ever been co-coaching with someone and they've gone off talking about something and you're like, oh my God, please stop? You have, because you're laughing.
I
We all
think it
have
was at the
that
weekend.
as so now you've named him or her without intentionally doing it, I guess. But you do, and you get that. But I also like there's I will say there's never been like a complete train wreck or something like that. And then I remember there was one, especially in the early part of my programs, it was always like I always needed that validation coming back the other way, that's yeah, we came in, we enjoyed it, that was good, all that sort of stuff. It was like, brilliant, okay, I'm hitting the spot here. And then after a while, I can't remember who it was. I won't name the name anyway, where I was thinking, oh, God, that wasn't really as good as I thought it might be. It didn't hit my buttons. But then the feedback was dripping in from other people to say, oh my God, and you just go, well, you know what? I'm gonna have to let go of some of this because it's just who I am, and it's just who the people in the room are that will like things more than others. Now,
Absolutely.
there's some sessions that go down an absolute storm, Scott, as you've seen before, where people are leaving the room going, yeah, that was exceptional, and those it's actually those moments that there's been a few over the years where I've gone, I've been doing this a long time, like, do I keep sort of rolling it out? And then you hit a session that's just gone, yeah, okay, well, I've got to keep doing this because fear of missing out, FOMO. Just rolling.
It's nice when it all clicks in. But you're right, even on the podcast, sometimes I've done ones where, always great guests, but I kind of thought, well, that's going to be an unbelievable one. And it kind of goes a bit quiet out there. And other ones think, oh, that's a little bit dry, whatever else. And you get loads of great emails on the Monday and the Tuesday from people saying, thanks, that was brilliant. So, like you say, although we may instigate these conversations, or I certainly do from what I'm interested in, where it lands is often just based on people's own circumstances and where they are, right? The age and stage of their development, which is what it's all about, isn't it? You're not going to always get that switch with everybody, but if you can get it enough times, that's what keeps it exciting.
Validated people with a niche or a niche, depending on where in the world you are, is like that's a great formula for putting great light bulb moments out there for coaches. And that and any more than that, I'm going to completely let go of, because it's not my job to tell you what to think about tactical periodization or whatever a certain way of passing the ball or whatever. We can go any, we can go really, really, I say zoom in or zoom out. So we would have a coach that would come in, for example, and deliver a really zoomed out game model, for example. So this is what we do in possession, this is what we do out of possession, all that. So a really kind of helicopter view of it. Or you have someone that would come in and talk about scanning for an hour. You know what I mean? But in
Explicit.
fact, we did a short course on it for 5 hours, literally on scanning. You know what I mean? And you can zoom in, zoom in, zoom in, zoom in.
And that's the beauty of the of the game, right? It is like that. You can just take a massive overview, or you can go right in there and really dig into something more specific, which is wonderful. Well, Ray, thanks so much. Before we talk about the CPD session coming up, just my final, like, maybe question or two is going to be around the other side of this coin then. So, Thank you so much for covering some of the stuff that makes a great coach developer. But there's two parts to this equation, right? And there's the people that come on the programs as well. And I know a lot of the listeners that listen to the podcast are similar to me, where we're very much on that side of the equation. We're learning and we want to be part of this stuff, and we do our CPD sessions or our coaching badges, what can we do to help ourselves, I guess, from your side of things, be the best learners we can be?
Well, I hinted at it earlier, actually. I believe that you're actually always the learner. I know that sounds a little bit corny or whatever, but I genuinely think that your coaching should be a whole bunch of experiments, kind of not necessarily one after the other, but certainly a fair share of it should be something new, something fresh, something I'm going to try. And I think if you kind of coach like that, I think it kind of sends you down coach development more.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example, a real life example. So obviously I'm on the grass as well. I'm with teams week in, week out, just like anyone else, just probably in a different way. That the last team I was coaching when I was at Boston back in England for a couple of years, we had a really good season. We had set up our, it's an under 19 team, so it's kind of it's a kind of a pathway, an entry point into the National League. So it's a really good division as well. And we set our team up to play in a certain way. And it worked really, it was bad, then it got better, and then it kicked off and did really, really well. And end of season, you sit down with assistant coach and the other staff and some of the players and go, "Oh, we're going to do that again." And I'm like, "No, I don't think so. I don't think we will. I think we should park that up because I think we've kind of gone through it. Let's do it in a different way and whatever that might look like, a different formation with a different whatever pressing figure that we were talking, we were doing a defending thing." So I think rather than just rolling out the same old stuff time and time again because your favorite formation is 4-2-3-1, or you don't like playing three at the back. I actually think players or parents, if you have a coach, for example, if you have a coach that's playing three at the back and you don't like it because it's three at the back, I think you should thank your lucky stars because they're actually offering something different than probably the 95% that are playing with back four systems, as an example. You know, I don't have any skin in the game when it comes to what formations people play, not really at least. But I do think at the end of the process, kids should have played on a variety of the versions of the game to allow for long-term learning, you know. So I'm really quite resolute with that.
Well, that's a good point there. Just on that one then quickly, because is there a danger with football getting taken? Well, again, this is anecdotal from my side of things, but it seems to be very serious at younger age groups now. Under six, sevens, eights, obviously with players getting signed early and these kind of things. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but the whole game becomes a bit more serious, a bit more younger than it may have done 10 or 15 years ago. Is there a risk that coaches won't be as brave in trying stuff out like this? So, are we in danger of getting under six coach that wants to play, a certain formation because that's going to drill into their 4-2-3 when they're under 18s and stuff like that, and we're not going to try and experiment anymore because we're worried about losing an under sevens match?
So I don't know if that's any different than it used to be because, and you know what, in it the worst version of Twitter X, the worst version of X is coaches slamming other coaches for just something they don't know any better, right? And that's it's as simple as that. So if I'm a dad that's starting to coach, my the first or mum, the first thing I'm going to do is go, what does football coaching look like for me? So probably, what did my football coach do with me? What have I seen on TV or whatever it is? And that is trying to win, signing players, getting rid of poor players for better players, shouting at people. That's what people think coaching is. Like if you did a skit of a coach, it would contain those things. Massive team talks that are wildly inappropriate for your under 16, but you see them, and it's general line drills. You know, we do 20 minutes of running to then stand the kids in queues doing nothing to pass a ball or whatever. Like some things just don't make sense when you know. And like coaches, do they eventually find out for themselves? Maybe or maybe not. Or they've got to go to another course, a CPE, or they'll get a different mentor that'll give them a light bulb about something else. And for me, it's about helping that journey along, regardless of whether you're new with the under six or whether you're. We've had pro coaches in the pro game, but what they will do is let's take the scanning webinar. If I'm a pro coach in the pro game watching a scanning webinar, I might pick something up that's good for my number eight and go, listen, there was an expert talking about this. I think you should try this. But the under six guy, you're going to have to take that right back to its basics of like, how much of that could they even possibly grasp? Or can I just do my training where we're playing games that forces them to look around more than standing in a queue, for example? So we have to translate the, I always use the analogy that if a primary school math teacher will have a math degree, but they don't teach degree level maths to 5-year-olds or 6-year-olds. They teach the version of maths that's appropriate for them. And it's the same with football. What does it look like at the highest level? That's our best model. So what does that translate to by the time it comes down to your level, your age, your context, all that?
And I guess it's not revolution, is it? It's evolution. You're just trying to put bits in there to evolve your game. So you can be brave as a coach to, whether it's under six, under 16s or whatever it might be, or first team. If you, when you get ideas, you haven't got to throw everything out and just put new things in. You can drop stuff in and evolve what you're doing, see if something works a little bit, just test it without, kind of risking everything. So I guess it's about being brave in the right way.
Totally. And like, what's better, like genuinely, what's better than you and an assistant coach, or you, the coach, and the players, like metaphorically taking each other by the hand and going, let's try this. What do you think of this? Like, let's do it. I remember Pep Linders, who was at Liverpool, under Klopp, talking about doing that with putting Alexander Arnold into midfield. It kind of disrupted everything else they did until they got in amongst it and fleshed it out and gone. But I think that's brilliant. And if you could do that while sort of winning Champions Leagues and fighting leagues and all that, and you can do it with your 16s on a Saturday, and you don't have to change everything, but you can move the needle, should we say. And I think that's important. I think to feel like I would like, sorry, I would like to feel I'm moving the needle around my coaching.
Love that. Thank you so much, Ray. Well, look, just before we finish off then, if you don't mind, can you talk us through kind of what the lights are going to be on your next CPD session you've got running? I know, when's it starting and what's it look like?
So Sunday, 13th of July. So I don't know exactly when this will be released, so I'm guessing it'll be right on top of that, probably.
Before
If it's a
then.
little bit off,
That'd be
yeah. If it's slightly after, just give me a message because we can sort of catch people up and things are recorded and all that sort of stuff. So you never truly miss out. But I mentioned Pitso earlier. He's coming in first. He's the sort of curtain raiser. I've got him for the first time ever. I've got a mystery guest that will not be recorded. That's bound. I shouldn't say this. Bound by his club, not to. He's not. I don't think necessarily divulging club secrets, but he's putting his expertise out there, but doesn't kind of want the fanfare around there and stuff like that. So that's really quite cool.
Very good.
John, so I'm in no particular order now. I'm doing a session on skillful neglect in coaching, which is kind of on the coach intervention webinar. It's a little bit different, I think, for most people. John Pasquarella is going to make tactical periodization understandable. I think a lot of people
Wow,
here have
worth it
and
just
have
for that.
no idea what. Yeah, for sure. Relative age, might know who's doing relative age. There's a very good book that I picked up and I got to know the author a little bit over the last few months called The Midfield 8.5. So a kind of a new age version of a number eight. I'm going to go down that rabbit hole. What else have we got? I'm definitely leaving people out. Sam Lomax, psychologist. He's going to talk about some decision-making stuff. And probably by the time we get from sort of July to November when we finish, we'll have cross-sectioned a whole heap of stuff and gone down a whole heap of rabbit holes. Every webinar is backed up with a resource of some so you don't, like I say, you don't log off and that's it.
Yeah.
If you'll get a resource, you'll be connected with someone else somewhere else in the world. So me and you could go down a rabbit hole about whatever, the
Yeah.
psychology or just to reinforce that learning.
And broadly, Ray, just as a reminder then, how do you structure your CPs? How does it work? You know, I know it goes on for a period of time. You know, is it a monthly get together? Just an overview of how the course plays
So
out.
we probably do, and it always depends on guests. You know, when guests are working in the pro game in particular, I'll always get a message, go, listen, I've got to go to this game, or I'm someone to lose their job or change their job, and I've got to go. You know, so it's fluid. We are the minute Super Sunday finishes in the Premier League on a Sunday. We're in Zoom land, and it won't be everyone. Sometimes it's three out of the four of the month. Sometimes it might be one out of the four for whatever reason. Sometimes I overlap with some of the short courses I do as well. So we've got a couple of them coming up. But generally across a 5 month period, you would have 10 plus a bonus sort of mid session Q&A and kind of tidy up some ideas. The 99% are recorded unless the guest really kind of wants to keep his ideas in house, which happens from time to time, but
Yeah.
that's quite cool as well. So yeah, 5 months, 11 sessions, it flies by. Honestly, it
It
flies
does.
by. You get to 8 or 9 and people go, what? It's really,
Yeah.
it's finishing. And then we've got a WhatsApp group as well that bubbles along with some of those ideas. If people want, and about being individual, if people want to come in, mic open, camera on, asking questions, you know, we facilitate that. If someone just wants to come in the background because of whatever, they've got kids screaming or, you know, life, like real life individual stuff. I do that actually when I'm in webinars. I just sit in the back and say nothing unless I really feel the urge to, because everyone's different. So,
Course. Brilliant.
yeah,
Brilliant,
everyone gets
Ray.
involved.
Thank you so much. We'll put the link in the show notes again to that for your details so people can reach out and find you. Also we'll put in your X handle and all the other stuff if people want to find out more about what it's you're doing, the CPD, anything else they can. Thank you so much for that. I'm not gonna ask about another book, am I? Should I ask about, or is that, you know, are you is the last one too recent to even consider another one yet?
It is a little bit,
Yeah.
only because, yeah, it's a process, and it's
Yeah.
I do miss it actually. So I have certain times of the day here. So I'm obviously in South Asia at the moment, so I'm 5 hours ahead of home. So I have a little bit of downtime by the time I've got my morning stuff done. And that was where I was shoehorning my book stuff in, and it was quite stressful and deadlines and all that. And I couldn't wait to not have that. And then after a couple of weeks, I'm like, God, I need some purpose, you know. I need to be,
Well, you got to do
you know.
10 books, right? You've done 9. You've got to get to double figures. So if it takes a little while, we'll wait, but you've got to get to 10, surely.
Well, I think it'll be a while. I'll let people read this one first.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah. Ray, thank you so much. I'm sure it'll fly. Number 30, I can't remember if it's 13 already, but I'm sure it will fly. Best I've ever think. And you know, hopefully, I'm sure we will. Let's, if you're up for it, can we talk again? Maybe even just before or around the end of the summertime, something like that, if that works for you.
Let's do it. You know what I'm like? Just, yeah, lock in a date and we'll do it.
Top man, thanks, Ray. Great to catch up.
Likewise, Scott. Cheers, mate.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.